This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are left very hopeless, very hopeless. People have been expecting the declining of the virus after they got vaccinated. Now we are not even sure if the vaccines we took will be able to fight this new variant.
That's Victress Matutu, a young mother working in Johannesburg on the possible impact of a new strain of COVID-19. Details coming up also. Nigerian police say they have rescued 5 of 73 students abducted from their school early this week. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The new COVID-19 variant recently detected in South Africa is causing fear and anxiety. The C.1.2 variant was first discovered in May and is already present in all 9 provinces and other countries like DRC, Switzerland, New Zealand, Mauritius, and Portugal. Scientists say it has worrying mutations. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
South Africans are still battling the Beta variant, which was first discovered in the country a year ago, triggering a deadly second wave. Victress Matutu is a young mother working in Johannesburg and expresses the growing stress and concern about the possible impact of the new strain.
We are left very hopeless, very hopeless. People have been expecting the declining of the virus after they got vaccinated. Now we are not even sure if the vaccines we took will be able to fight this new variant or not.
Scientists have called for calm, saying it's too early to conclude that the new variant is deadly. This assurance has brought no comfort to citizens like Lindy Shabangu.
I'm at the point whereby I'm just living with hope, and I'm just praying and hoping for a better tomorrow. Whatever happens, happens, and we go through it. And as long as I'm in the cities, I will go with the flow until I leave the cities.
Throughout the pandemic, many jobs and livelihoods have been lost, with unemployment hitting a record high. Families have lost their loved ones. Stephen Maps says they do not wish to go through such trauma again.
My initial fear is that with the vaccines that are being developed, I'm not sure if they will all be able to deal with the new variants as they become detectable. We can only hope for the best.
Under the current level 3 restrictions, contact classes in schools and universities have resumed. But there are some that fear the C.1.2 variant may reverse such gains. The National Institute of Communicable Diseases, NICD, says the new variant, which is in the same lineage with SARS-CoV-2, is still limited to low frequency. Penny Moore from the NICD told a media briefing that the World Health Organization, WHO, has been notified, although the variant has not yet fulfilled WHO's criteria to be classified as a variant of concern.
It shares some common mutations both with Beta, which was responsible for the second wave in South Africa, and also with Delta. And we know that some of those mutations do confer immune escape, and that means that it's likely that this variant will show reduced sensitivity to antibodies.
South Africa has been the country worst hit by COVID-19 in Africa, with 2.27 million infections and over 82,000 deaths, and is struggling to bolster vaccinations, with fewer than 13 million people getting a jab out of a population of 60 million. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Chinese telecommunications giant Huawei says it wants to train up to 3 million African youths to work with cutting-edge digital technology such as artificial intelligence. Already, Nigerian students who took part in a Huawei-sponsored information and communications technology competition say the benefits, including possible job placements with the company, are enormous. But experts warn there could be potential negative impacts of China's growing tech influence in Africa. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
computer engineering finalist Muhammad Mayhaja is set to graduate from the Ahmadu Bello University in Nigeria's Kaduna State in November. In 2019, he was part of a team of six from the school who represented Nigeria at the Global Huawei ICT Competition in Shenzhen, China, where they finished in third place. Huawei introduced the competition to Africa in 2014 to identify and nurture highly skilled ICT professionals. What the company says is part of its expanding talent search in Africa's tech sector that has benefited some 2,000 African students like Mayhaja.
We have been exposed to devices and technologies we've never experienced before. Normally, a normal university student will not experience what we experience in the competition. So I would say that pushed me towards... I wasn't much more IT inclined before, but this has made me to be much more IT inclined, so to say.
The competition evaluates students' competence in network and cloud technology. Mayhaja and his team's success in 2019 was a rare achievement for an African team, let alone a first-time participant. The feat inspired many other students like Hamza Atabo, who tried out for the next edition in 2020. He and other Nigerian students this time won the competition.
I was inspired by, you know, when they talked about their stories, how they won the competition, and also when they were given their prizes and everything, I just felt, okay, this is actually something to make sacrifice for.
Students like Mayhaja and Atabo are meeting Huawei's set objective, but critics say the company is only a fragment of China's fast-paced dominance in Africa's technology landscape. Huawei reportedly accounts for more than 70% of the continent's telecommunications network. Mohamed Bashir Moazu, a professor of computer engineering at Ahmadu Bello University, says it's no surprise China is gaining traction in Africa.
Seeing the level of technological development in China, I think it's inevitable what is actually happening.
Concerns about China's presence in Africa grew in 2019 after U.S. newspaper The Wall Street Journal reported that Huawei had helped Ugandan and Zambian authorities spy on political opponents. Huawei denied the accusations and declined an interview on the matter. But ICT expert Samuel Adekola says China could use its competitive advantage for selfish gains.
It's really dangerous. I cannot quantify how much they could go, because whoever has data, you can do a lot of things. You have whoever has data has a lot of information. With data, you can extract a lot of information about a group of people, about the nation.
As long as China continues to invest in Africa, students like Mayhaja and Atabo will learn valuable skills, even though experts say Africa may have to pay a price for relying too heavily on foreign companies. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The United Nations Environment Programme has announced the end of using leaded petrol globally after an almost two-decades-long campaign against the sale of the highly toxic fuel. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
When service stations in Algeria stopped providing leaded petrol in July, the use of the toxic fuel ended globally, eliminating a major threat to human and planetary health. Speaking to reporters at a recent virtual briefing, government officials and climate activists hailed the move, terming it a historical milestone for human health and environmental protection. Inga Anderson is the executive director of the UN's Environmental Program, or UNEP.
Leaded fuel illustrates, in a nutshell, the kind of mistakes that humanity has been making at every level of our societies, the kind of mistakes that have brought us to the triple planetary crisis, the crisis of climate change, the crisis of biodiversity loss, and the crisis of pollution.
She says that since 1922, the use of tetraethyl lead as a petrol additive to improve engine performance has been a catastrophe for the environment and public health. By the 1970s, almost all petrol produced around the world contained lead. When UNEP began its campaign to eliminate lead in petrol in 2002, it was considered to be one of the most serious environmental threats to human health. Anderson, who is also a Danish economist and environmentalist, gave more details.
But in the global response to leaded fuel, it shows that humanity can learn from and fix mistakes that we've made. We got here with a cooperation of over 75 members of this partnership, including governments and industry and international organizations and independent experts. We got here through a campaign to eliminate the use of leaded fuels in 86 countries. Now, this wasn't easy. We had to overcome resistance from companies producing the lead additive.
Scientists say leaded petrol causes heart disease, stroke and cancer. It also affects the development of the human brain. Children, in particular, are vulnerable to lead exposure, with the studies linking its use to lower IQs. Mike Walsh is an international clean vehicles expert.
By the 1970s, two concerns were growing quite rapidly. One, there were a number of studies that showed that children, especially young children, were especially vulnerable. Their IQ and their behavior was strongly influenced by their exposure to lead, and lead in gasoline was the largest source of exposure.
It's estimated that the ban on the use of leaded petrol has prevented more than 1 million premature deaths per year, increased IQ points among children, and decreased crime rates. The UN says while many countries have already begun transitioning to electric cars, 1.2 billion new vehicles will hit the road in the coming decades, the majority of which will use fossil fuels, especially in developing countries. This includes millions of poor quality used vehicles exported from Europe, the United States, and Japan to mid and low income countries. Luke Gnakaja is former Environment Minister of Benin and a former Executive Secretary of the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification.
It is projected that in the next decade, the number of light duty vehicles in Africa will triple and the demand of oil will double. African governments are contemplating the adoption and enforcement of minimum standards to ensure that used vehicles imported in Africa meet the minimum environment and safety requirements, some of them known as Euro 4.
By the 1980s, most high-income countries had prohibited the use of leaded petrol, yet as late as 2002, it was still in use in almost all low- and middle-income countries. In 2006, the first major success was achieved. Sub-Saharan Africa went unleaded. The last country to switch was Algeria in July 2021. But while the world has now eliminated the largest source of lead pollution, some say urgent action is still needed to stop lead pollution from other sources such as lead in paints, leaded batteries, and lead in household items. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
12 people have died and thousands have fallen ill after a river in the southern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo was contaminated by toxic waste that leaked from a neighboring Angola's largest diamond mine. According to Reuters, a tributary of the Congo River ran red after a dam in Angola, which was used to store mining industry waste, ruptured. Congo, which shares a 2,575-kilometer-long border with Angola, says it will seek compensation. The miner's operator, Katoka, did not immediately respond to a request about the damages, claims, and deaths. It is the latest in a string of disasters executives and environmentalists have tried to curtail with safety and inspection standards introduced last year. However, not all mining companies, including Katoka, have publicly committed to the standards, which are non-binding. In Zimbabwe, the president has approved amendments to the law governing private voluntary organizations, or PVOs. Observers say his decision is part of a move by government to upend civic society before the upcoming 2023 general elections. Eddie Gando has more on the story.
Amendments signed by President Emmerson Mnangagwa this week give the government the power to penalize, suspend, or sanction private voluntary organizations that are judged to be operating outside the parameters of the law. Observers say the Mnangagwa administration is now acting to thwart the perceived threat from non-governmental organizations or NGOs whom it deems as enemies of the state. Information Minister Monica Mtsangwa addressed journalists during a post-cabinet briefing and said that Private Voluntary Associations Amendment Bill would be used to monitor the activities of the voluntary organizations. She revealed that among other issues, the bill proscribes private voluntary organizations from engaging in political activities and encourages them to focus their mandates for the benefit of the most vulnerable in society. On this basis, private voluntary organizations are prohibited from political lobbying on behalf of organizations, individuals, or political parties. Penalties for violating the act include the suspension of the executive committee of the PVOs for maladministration or failure to execute their declared mandate. Sociopolitical analyst Effie Nwue sees in the approved changes an attempt to liquidate civic society, which in the past has been accused of supporting the opposition.
It is crushing democracy and going against the rule of law. Remember, the organizations that are talking about are sticking to their mandate. They are advocacy organizations that are campaigning for democracy, for human rights, for the rule of law. And that is what they are suffering for not being quiet when the state is doing whatever it wants, when the state is forcibly disappearing people, undermining the principles of democracy and destroying society itself. When those organizations speak out, the state feels threatened.
The government says the amendments are intended to combat money laundering and the financing of terrorism by any individual institution in Zimbabwe operating under the PVO banner. But political analyst Sibusiso Ndlovu disagrees.
Honestly, we cannot talk about terrorism and Zimbabweans being involved in terrorism through organizations. I think they would need to give us an example of an organization. I think that was just an excuse to then come down hard on NGOs and PVOs. Otherwise, there is no proof that any organizations have been involved in terrorism. So this is just a government trying to limit the activities and the extent to which civic society and NGOs can be active during the next elections. They know that we're now going into campaign mode, and a lot of NGOs usually enable political parties through giving them platforms, interviewing them, asking them to debate each other, you know, giving them a voice that ZBC won't give them, that state media won't give them, or that advocacy platforms won't give them, that government-funded platforms won't give them. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. We're taking steps back.
Lovu sees dark days ahead for civic society participation in creating a more equal society in Zimbabwe. She says the government's moves roll back a pledge to encourage more civic engagement. Meanwhile, the Zimbabwe Human Rights NGO Forum says that the government has always viewed PVOs with apprehension, suspicion, and even outright contempt, which is now manifesting itself in the new reforms. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
Nigerian police say they have rescued 5 of 73 students abducted from their school earlier this week in northwestern Nigeria. The Associated Press quoted a police report as saying the 5 female students have been reunited with their families. 73 students were abducted from the Government Day School in Kaya on Wednesday by gunmen, prompting the Zamfara state government to shut down primary and secondary schools. More than 1,000 children have been kidnapped from schools in Nigeria since December. UNICEF says some 200 are believed to still be in captivity. Some of those released were reported to have been let go only after their parents paid ransom. The World Health Organization warns few governments are providing necessary care for many of the more than 55 million people living with dementia at a time when this debilitating brain condition is growing rapidly around the world. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
A stock-taking analysis of WHO's 2017 Global Action Plan on Dementia shows few states are implementing measures for caring and treating people living with this condition. It finds only a quarter of countries worldwide have a national policy or plan for supporting people with dementia and their families. It warns too many governments are unprepared to deal with this growing public health problem, which affects 55 million people globally, more than 60% in low- and middle-income countries. The World Health Organization estimates the number of people with dementia will rise to 78 million by 2030 and an estimated 139 million by 2050. WHO estimates the global cost of dementia also is expected to balloon from the present $1.3 trillion to $2.8 trillion by 2030. Technical officer in WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Use, Katrin Seer, says too many countries lack a basic comprehensive policy to respond to the challenges that lie ahead.
We also need to strengthen the health and the social care system in countries to ensure that there is universal access to dementia diagnosis, but also to treatment and care. And we especially need to reduce the gap that exists between high-income and low- and middle-income countries and between urban and rural areas.
Dementia is caused by a variety of diseases and injuries that affect the brain, such as Alzheimer's disease or stroke. It mainly afflicts people over the age of 60 and can affect memory, other cognitive functions, and make it difficult to perform everyday tasks. Tarun Dua is unit head of WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Use. While there is no cure, she says reducing risk factors can potentially prevent up to 40% of dementia cases.
For example, healthy diet, looking at the risk factors, which are the same risk factors for non-communicable diseases such as tobacco use or harmful use of alcohol, managing conditions like hypertension, diabetes, depression, social isolation. These are the things that we can do to promote our brain health and decrease the cognitive decline and the risk for dementia.
WHO reports people with dementia require primary health care, specialist care, community-based services, rehabilitation, long-term care, and palliative care. Health officials note dementia is not a normal part of aging, but countries must be prepared to support and care for the increasing numbers of people that will be afflicted with this disabling condition in the years to come. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the International